Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your trigger warning. This podcast contains unfiltered conversations about trauma, abuse, and survival. Discretion is advised. This is not therapy or medical advice, just real people sharing real stories. So please take care of yourself and pause if you need to. If this conversation hits home, grab the book Survival Mode Exit Plan, your raw, unapologetic blueprint to break free. Available now by scanning the QR code or clicking the link in the comments. Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. I am Leticia, your host of Survival Mode Disruptor, and I am very excited to have Jackie here with us today. So Jackie, why don't you introduce yourself?
Love to. Thank you so much for the invitation. It's terrific to be here with your audience. My name is Jacqueline Young, and I also go by Jackie. One of the chances of having one of those long to shorten names, which I did not give my own children. And I am what's called a mind shift coach. And my background is basically as a retired CEO in education. And I had a wonderful career. And then I jumped into really looking at neuroscience, neuroplasticity, quantum physics, and hypnosis, actually, and learned an awful lot about how the mind affects everything.
Okay, I can't wait to jump into this. I am a very big fan of neuroscience and digging into that. So I hope we can get into a conversation about that later. But why don't you just share your story with us?
Great. Yeah. And I'm really thrilled with the idea behind your podcast. I think it's really important for people to really not necessarily embrace their trauma, but figure through their trauma because it informs so much about who we are and who we become and what our choices are and really simply how we act and react to everything. And so my own story is not that different from everyone else's. I mean, I think everyone has a story to tell. My background is that my father was an alcoholic, and it's taken me years to figure out that he was working through his own trauma, of course, generational trauma. He was probably self-medicating for his own depression. And in living with an alcoholic, I learned how to become very, very good at walking on eggshells, fawning, and freezing. So that's how my system became very good at dysregulating and scanning for way too much information, always being on high alert. So during my 20s, before I got married, actually, when I was pregnant, I was working on my master's in counseling. And I did an awful lot of work during that time to really understand my own feelings and come to grips with things. I had been doing well in my work. I had started my teaching career and I was moving up in a path of towards administration. And I loved my work. Everything about my life was kind of jogging along the way that one could anticipate it going well for a perfectionist, an overachiever, and a people pleaser, such as myself. But I really wanted to start digging into the stuff that I probably had not come to grips with. And so I did an awful lot of work moving through that trauma and how I had chosen to move through it in my particular case. And everything seemed to be going really, really well. The reason I was interested in reaching out to you in terms of the content of your show was that My career then took off. I had two beautiful kids. I had a lovely marriage. Things from the outside looked like they were really, really good. And they were. And then I took another job in another location, which started off going well, but then things shifted. I applied for another job. They found out about it. Things did not go well. And then what started for me was what happens to a lot of high achieving people is death by a thousand cuts. So I was being publicly taken to task. I was asked to extend my integrity and my morals and my ethics in ways that did not feel that they were good for me. And what happened was, because I was feeling unsafe, I went right back to fawning and freezing. And so for 2.5 years, I was going into weekly meetings for fear of when another penny was going to drop, or that's not the right phrase, when I was going to get attacked again publicly, when I was going to be made to feel lesser than. And I mean, I want to be fair because with growth comes self-reflection. Because I was in fawn or freezing, I wasn't doing as good a work as I should have, as I should have been. And because I wasn't at my best, of course, I was always in a dysregulated parasympathetic or a sympathetic system, which was on overload. And I then chose to leave. Actually, I chose to leave because my doctor wrote me a note that said I could not go back to work for these people. I don't think I ever would have left. I would have continued, as so many of us do, moving through that particular way of being, thinking that it was normal. And therein lies a lot of the issue is that I was trying to normalize it. And I was completely dysregulated. I wasn't sleeping. I had put on like 30 pounds within a year. I was doing everything but really trying to come to grips with what was going on in how my body was responding because my mind was in such overload. I was really always seeking for that next shoe to drop. So I was doing the exact same thing I had done when I was 13, scanning for what was supposed to happen or what might could happen, looking for all the things that could fall apart because that was the way that I could felt that I could feel like I was coping. That's when I realized that I absolutely needed to take care of myself. I left, as I said, because the doctor said, you have to leave. You cannot sustain yourself in this particular situation. And it was the best thing for me. I then took another job, which was very healing. And then things kind of went a little bit south in that job also through the pandemic. There was a lack of meeting of the minds in terms of how to move through the pandemic appropriately. But what was happening again is that I was having a resurgence of that same trauma response that I had yet to actually deal with. So what I did was I took the time after COVID hit, as the whole world shut down, of course, I shut down, and really dug deep into what had happened to me and why I, thinking I was so healthy and on top of the world and, in a CEO position and doing so well by all outward measures, was not. And I took a lot of time to figure out what had happened to my body, what had happened in my mind. And that's really when I started opening up about the unconscious mind and figuring out how I had betrayed myself, how my body was betraying me, trying to get me to pay attention to it, and figuring out, you can't continue in this way. So, out of all of that, and it was about a good solid 2-year journey of taking courses and figuring things out, and lots of tears, lots of self-reflection, a lot of remorse, and a lot of regrets, which I have now been able to move through because they ultimately were good learning tools, but they don't serve you in the long run. Good places to visit, not good to bring into your household. And I then came up with a course. My signature course, which is called the Mind, Body, and Spirit Coherence Blueprint. And I am a hypnotist because all of the rabbit holes that I went down in terms of neuroplasticity and neuroscience and quantum physics all ended in understanding the unconscious mind, not just through mindfulness, but truly understanding how it works. And because there's so much science that is now behind understanding the mind. We have functional MRIs and we have ways that we can really track what's going on in the brain. We can now take what used to be theory and kind of concretize it and say, no, this is now what we know is going on in the mind. All of that just kind of fed me into creating my new business, which is based on helping women who are high achievers, usually with the deadly trifecta of people pleasing, perfectionism, and oh gosh, perfectionism, overachieving, and people pleasing, how to understand the barriers that we put in our own way, how to understand how to put up boundaries appropriately, and how to understand that if we don't deal with our own trauma, that it's going to somehow leak out. And one of the phrases that I use all the time is that there will always be leakage. You understand that the mind and the body and the spirit are all completely need to be in alignment for us to be able to move forward and claim our best self, claim our highest divinity. And unless we take the time to figure out that we are A, not in alignment, and B, need to take action, then we're always going to continuously have the same repeating patterns that make us feel like that hamster on the hamster wheel, which is what we always, say. I feel like I can't get off the hamster wheel, or I've got all my plates spinning and I'm afraid they're going to drop, but I can't stop spinning. Unless we take the time to really dig deep into whatever we identify as trauma, and we've all got it. Like, that's the thing. It doesn't have to be really big and huge. It's simply a time in our life when we felt unseen, unsafe, unloved, and unheard. And then, like, you are going to have some things that need to be dealt with. And since we all have those feelings at some point, that's when the work that I do is so impactful. So we just get right back to what's going on in terms of the mind, body, and spirit. And we do an awful lot of self-reflection in a very safe environment, in a way that is growth-oriented, based on growth mindset work. And we move forward together and we celebrate and we take responsibility for what we need to, and we forgive the other stuff that does not do anything but just hold us back. So I think that's me in a nutshell in terms of what happened, how I went through things, what I chose to deal with, how I chose to deal with it, and then trying to come out on the other side. I'm probably much older than a lot of your audience, and my kind of mission right now is to grab women in their 30s and 40s when this discontent starts, not to reach the level of what the heck is going on in my body and why am I literally shutting down. It's too far gone then, and we can deal with things and learn a whole bunch about the mind, body, and spirit in our 30s and 40s, and then have much happier times.
What I appreciate about your story and the way that you told it is you were very articulate with the residual impact,
Yeah.
right? My question to you to start with is, did you address your trauma with your father prior to it showing up in your career?
That's a fantastic question. My father and I were not in contact. And then he passed away. And I was there when he passed with my brothers. And his passing was very calm for me because I was very detached. But what I've come to understand is that I needed to take some time to really figure out why he made the choices that he did, which is why I can say with brevity, but with also great care and, love, he was working through his own stuff. When we can forgive our own ways of working in through our own trauma, it's really important. So initially, I would have said no, but then yes. So when I thought I did, here's the right answer. When I thought I did, I was in a place of I'm okay because we are disconnected and it made things easier to move forward. When I could really open that up and kind of pull it apart a little bit more and say, oh, now I have a deeper understanding that comes from wisdom and being a parent myself and how challenging life can be. It brings another level of understanding, which can be based on a letting go. So, yes, I think that that's probably the best answer. So, I thought I had, and at that point in my life, I had for what was necessary. But again, it was only in getting much older that I thought, no, you know what? There's more here to unpack about who he was, what drove him to his decisions. And we're all faulty people. You know, people are complex. We all bring our best self as much as we're able to our situations. And being able to kind of sit in the pocket of that understanding is very, very freeing.
I agree with you with that. And one of the reasons why I want to have these conversations is because oftentimes there isn't enough grace given. Like, I am a person who is not a strong supporter of pushing victims to forgive right away. I believe that self-forgiveness is the most important thing. However, our society is very quick to say, well, you should forgive that and move on. And I often think it's because there isn't enough understanding of what it truly means to move on. And oftentimes we forgive, I'm going to say forgive in quotations,
Yes.
without fully processing.
Yeah.
And we don't necessarily recognize how deeply rooted the impact of the trauma that we experience has in our lives. So I'm not one to be like, forgive, forgive. I think forgiveness comes eventually, but I believe it comes on the back of full processing and really digging deep. And then I think that's where the compassion comes in. That's where the grace comes in. That's where the understanding comes in.
I could not have said it any better, and I could not agree with you more. I work with an awful lot of women who come with big trauma, and sexual abuse and sexual assault trauma. And one of the things that I'll say at the very beginning is, please understand that I will never tell you that you have to forgive someone. What we're going to do in our thoroughness of unpacking this is to understand what the whole thing has meant for you, and how you can go back and forgive yourself for not doing what you're not forgiving yourself for doing in that moment, i.e., I should have run, I should have told someone, I should have, I would have, I could have. And all of that needs to be forgiven, that self-forgiveness about you did what you knew to be okay at the time to keep yourself safe, to keep yourself whole, to keep yourself moving forward. And so to look back with self-recrimination doesn't do any good at all. So if we're going to talk about forgiveness, it's about understanding and being able to let go the guilt, the shame, the fear, the remorse, the regret of what it has done to hold you back. Ironically, of course, when you get curious about yourself, about, well, why didn't I do that? In a reflective, curious way, full of wonder, as opposed to I should have, which is very, very different.
It's more, it
Then,
leans more on criticism.
exactly. And then that does open you up to, okay, now what does it mean to be wondrous, a wondering and curious about others and their choices about behavior? But it's never about, you know, you will feel better if you forgive. I'm with you 100%. You will feel better once you have an understanding of your own ways in which you chose to work through things or deal with things in the moment, and understand that at that point, it was the very best that you had. Like your problem solving when you're 7 or 13 or 21, or whenever that trauma hits you, and then you become so dysregulated and your unconscious mind figures out a way to keep you safe, to keep you moving through things. That's why I think the work that we are able to do now in mind shifting and really figuring out, well, what did happen to my mind, and what are the barriers that I've now created? What are the belief systems about myself that I can now unpack now that I'm feeling safe and I have a better understanding of me as a person? So I could not agree with you more, Letitia. And I think it's a very important point.
Yes, I agree. And I'm usually met with resistance, right? When I say that, because people tend to think that I'm saying don't forgive.
Yeah.
It's not that I just don't think it's the first priority, which society tends to make us believe
Yeah.
is. What I also loved was how you categorized or how you described trauma. You said it's when you feel unseen, unsafe, unloved, and unheard. And by breaking it down like that, I think more people can relate to being in a traumatic experience, right? One of the things that I have seen in my discussions is oftentimes people don't even recognize that they have been traumatized
Yes.
because they categorize trauma as big T trauma, right? Like, I wasn't raped, I wasn't abused, I wasn't this, I wasn't that. And it's not just these big T massive events that create trauma responses for us.
Yeah.
It could be something as simple as high stress environments on a continual basis, or simply not being able to process the stimuli that is
Yes.
around us, right? And I think one of the things a lot of people don't really understand is what trauma really is. And I've explained this before, but I'm going to reiterate it. It's really when we are introduced to a stimuli, we have an emotional or physical reaction to that. On normal circumstances, we go through this pattern where our nervous system becomes deregulated. We experience this emotional or physical response, and then eventually we go back to a state of normality.
Right.
What happens is when someone is categorized as being traumatized, they haven't been able to adequately complete that cycle. So
Yes.
oftentimes they stay in that physical or emotional response for an extended period of time. And because the cycle isn't closed, the next stimuli will get a bigger response because we're still in that state. And that could be anything. It could be as simple as being hungry all the time, right? We're in a state of survival.
Yeah.
But what is important is it happens to us almost on a daily basis, and most of us are able to close that cycle. But if we are exposed to repeated events over an extended period of time where we find ourselves responding in the same way, this is when it starts becoming a little bit of a concern and something that needs to be addressed.
I
You
once heard some, sorry,
okay,
go
ahead.
ahead.
No, you
I
once
once
heard
heard
some.
someone say that trauma is you feel a certain way about something, something happens, and now you feel differently about the same situation or feeling or behavior or place. And I thought, that's as simple as it is. Like it doesn't have to be your whole world is shaken. When I talk to people about how hypnosis works and how your unconscious mind protects you, because that's its sole purpose is to protect you. But when you're five, it only has the ability of a five-year-old to get creative and protect you in terms that make sense. So the story that I tell is you love hiking and you walk in one day with muddy boots after hiking with your dad. It's been a beautiful fall day. Your mother has spent 4 hours cleaning the house and you walk into the kitchen with your muddy boots and your mother screams at you because she's human. She's not traumatizing you on purpose, but your unconscious mind says, oh my gosh, you're unsafe. What just happened? And what do I now need to put in place to protect you? And so it will do a number of things. It could either make you feel really funny about the kitchen, or your relationship with your mother will change drastically. Or in the example that I use, I'll say, all of a sudden, your unconscious mind says, it must be hiking. So something about hiking has now made you feel unsafe. Now, there isn't really a connection there, but there is in your little five-year-old brain. It makes perfect sense. So when we go back and you come to me when you're 40 and say, I want to start hiking again. I don't know what happened when I shut that down. And we realize that it happened this one freaking time when your mother just lost her temper appropriately. And then she apologized like 30 seconds later, but it doesn't matter. because the traumatic response has already been solidified. It is made to be a pathway that happens just like that, with such assuredness and clarity that it takes going back and having to divulge what happened to figure out the trauma. So I use that example because it doesn't have to be big T trauma. It can be something so little. And then how does it affect your life? You stop doing something that you loved since the time you were 5 years old. So it's a really wonderful thing to recognize how the mind does work, how neuroplasticity allows for us to understand that anything can be delved into and opened up and looked at in a very safe way. Because that's the other thing. People get very fearful of, I don't think I'm going to survive it again if I have to go back and revisit it. And what I will say is that certainly through working with a trained hypnotist who understands trauma, or who understands especially the mind, body, and spirit connection, that what we do is keep everything safe. And so the moving through that trauma is not like it is when you're just talking in talk therapy. There's another layer of safety because your unconscious mind strives to keep you safe. And all we do is unpack what happened and then kind of rejig the messaging. This is what happened. If you go back in your memory, this is what happened with your mom. Oh my gosh, I can now see it with clarity. She was simply mad at me. It had nothing to do with hiking. And we move forward. But you're right. I mean, you've nailed so many really key points that I think are important for people to really hear with crystal hearing in terms of, oh, okay, that could be me. I could have something. And whenever you know that you're triggered by something, you have a response, or sorry, a reaction that is completely out of whack with a stimuli, you know that there is something going on with you that you need to do some unpacking about.
Absolutely. The audience has heard me say this 100 times, but I think there are three phases to accident survival mode. Awareness is number one, reprogramming is number two, and then there is this sense of reinvention, changing the persona that you had to become in order to survive. What is interesting is in my as I've learned more, and I've also been introduced to the personas that develop as a result of the trauma. And you've mentioned that three of them are the key factors to the women that you work with: high achievers, people pleasers, and perfectionists. And often it's getting to the root of why those trauma responses occurred in the first place. Can you think of any other personas that come up as a result of our traumatic experiences?
The personas, no. And I do want to take a moment and give credit where credit is due because I have really focused on those three through the work of Margaret Rutherford, who talks about perfectly hidden depression. So, for all of those people who think that they've got, oh, yeah, that's me, I've got the deadly trifecta, please look at her work because she will walk you through why you are feeling depressed, but you've got this sunny disposition, and it's just a lot of undealt worked through trauma or responses. But what I would say is the limiting beliefs that we bring because of trauma. So all of a sudden, we will solidify something like literally develop a neural pathway that says, I am not good enough. I have a funny relationship with money. Like, money is a really big trauma one, also. And of course, sex is a big one. So, those ones that we know that where things kind of filter through for people, or where there's triggers for people, how you spend money, how I spend money, what's worthy, how do you explain my worthiness through gifts? What can I purchase for myself? Is there ever going to be enough? And I do think that what we're living in now with this kind of Amazon, I want it, I send something, I get it the next day, the immediacy of capitalism in terms of our desire for want can really stifle our exploration of what we're feeling because it's like an addict, it's a dopamine hit. So I think that's one of the biggest things is what I saw through COVID and loneliness and hopelessness. Is that there's an awful lot of dopamine hitting. There's a lot of doom scrolling and screen reeling and just moving through things to kind of deaden how we're feeling, more drinking to excess, more porn, more playing on the edges of having affairs to into dangerous territory. So people are looking for stimulation to keep themselves kind of feeling a buzz versus, wait a minute, I actually should be desiring to feel calm and at peace and serene and tranquil, because that's what you're supposed to feel. You're not supposed to feel like you're hijacked all the time. That is not worthy of being normalized, and yet that's what we are tending to normalize. Well, this is what everybody's talking like now. Everybody's work environment is crappy. Everybody's feeling like they're unseen, they're overwhelmed and unheard, and everybody is drinking too much or doing too much of this, or like parenting doesn't seem to have the same gravitas to it that it did before. And I say that without rancor and without criticism. The stuff that I'm reading is in regards to how are parents understanding what parenting looks like now? And you've got this divide between gentle parenting and parenting that is completely hands off and doing nothing. It's a really interesting time about how people are choosing to maybe not deal with things, and then the spillover that then becomes intergenerational, whether we like it or not.
And I'm smiling as you're saying that because a lot of it is conditioned, right? Like
Yes.
I
Yeah.
recognize as and speaking about this as before as well, I come from an environment as a black woman where I was conditioned to strength, right? I
Yes.
can't show weakness because it won't be received. It becomes vulnerability. So a lot of my processing was based on how I was conditioned and how I think I thought I had to show up. And that was passed on generationally. The other thing about this is because we don't have a big enough awareness about the residual impact of trauma, most people don't realize that they're not operating at the full strength. And as a result of not addressing things, we subconsciously become addicted to that state that I was talking about before, where we're heightened with a fight, flight, fawn response, similar to how you were talking. This becomes our normal state. So, peace, what is that? Because I have never seen it, I don't know what that is. And even if I am in a state of peace, because I've been in this space for so long and I'm addicted to it, I can't receive peace and calm. And that, I think that's why these conversations are so critical, because I feel like the progression of technology has really put us into this numb state, because again, we have so much stimuli and outward, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but we have outward sources of those dopamine hits that you spoke about, which allow us to almost numb our emotions and numb what we're feeling. So we aren't forced to deal with it. And it's oftentimes it's when we hit an absolute wall that, okay, now this is critical without because we don't have the awareness of how much it's impacting us on a day-to-day.
I was one of those living, breathing examples of that. Like, literally, I was off for what I thought was going to be a week, maybe a week and a half. And it took my doctor listening to me describe my work environment for her to say, okay, I'm writing you a letter. And I thought, oh, good. Like, I'll get a letter for a week or week and a half. And she said, no, like, you can't go back to this particular situation. You're hanging on by a thread. But because I had normalized it so much, it had been so gradual. It's like that whole thing about putting the frog into the water and it starts to boil, but the frog doesn't know to jump out, which would be the easiest thing to do. You start normalizing everything around you, and everybody is kind of figuring that this is what work is like now. No, it shouldn't be. And if it is, then we have to take issue with that also in terms of learning how do I defend myself appropriately from that as a work environment that is feeling normalized? Because that's the other thing. People are now trying to, well, this is what work feels like now. This is how you have to do it. And that is just as disconcerting to me as the situation I was in. Because again, we're trying to normalize something that's completely abnormal. I read something, and I think it was Germany. It could have been anywhere. It really doesn't matter. But the idea of asking someone, what do you do for a hobby, was very easily answered in this particular European place. It was, I paint, I ride, I do this or whatever. But when you ask someone in North America, what do you do to kind of regulate your system? What do you do for a hobby for joy? Very few people have something that they can say. So usually it's gardening because you have to go out and garden and hopefully you enjoy it. As someone who hates gardening, that was never one that was going to feed my soul. So, and I'm not going out running either, unfortunately. So there's two that are kind of off my beaten track there. But it was interesting because I thought, well, what do we do to get back to our joyful state, which is our childish state, our childhood state, which is inevitably joy. That's what we're meant to be, is joyful. And when I mention the word joy to people, it's like I've said, a different language that they've never heard of before. So what does that mean? It's like when you were saying peace. Well, what is that supposed to look like? And then when you start saying to people, well, like it's when you're kind of walking and you just see something with new eyes. There's a clarity to how you see things, and you can appreciate differently because you've changed your mindset, because you've been able to say, I am worthy of this calm. I am worthy of a peacefulness. I'm worthy of being with my own thoughts and not being afraid of what that's about because I have grown to really love and appreciate myself, warts and all. Like I appreciate my journey. I appreciate what I've had to grow through and learn from and come out the other side more whole. It's like, it's all of those things to be able to say, yeah, I really like I take my clients on a trip of self-love and self-actualization, as I'm sure you do too with your listeners, because that therein lies your joy. It's not about buying or accumulating or the capitalistic ideas. It's about being able to be silent with yourself and just saying, oh, this is where I can breathe. This is where I can explore who I am. I can make choices for my next steps, what I want to grow into. And that's real empowerment. It's not the title on your door. It's the empowerment of being, really joyful and at peace with who you've chosen to be and show up to be in the world.
And that's the part that so many people are missing, right? That
Yeah.
reinvention part. You
Yes.
we have so much control of the definition of life, right? And we get hung up on the societal constructions and controls, and I talk about the conveyor belt of success
Yes.
oftentimes, right? Like we are conditioned from very young to follow societal norms that we don't recognize how much control we have over defining what brings us contentment. And I never use the word happiness because I feel like, some people like I don't even know what it means to be happy.
Yeah.
I'm talking about contentment where
Yes.
there is no lack that you can identify because you are placing yourself in environments that serve you. But
Yes.
to even come to the understanding that you get to choose what serves you and what doesn't serve you is so foreign to
Yeah.
people. And
Yeah.
I think that's the part. Like, that is probably one of the major parts why I want to have these conversations, because so many of us are on this conveyor belt that someone else prescribed and not recognizing how much of life we are actually missing out on as a result.
Yeah. The other thing that it's funny because I was in a group chat at some point and trying to identify, what seems to be a prevailing aspect of how people are seeing the world now. And there is a real desire, not a desire. There is a default to victimhood. There is a default to I am being done to, as opposed to I actually have a lot of choice and power that I can exert here. And with victimhood, of course, becomes or comes the idea of I have no control. And then it's just that sort of, it's that self-perpetuating cycle of therefore I have no control. It doesn't matter what choices I make, and therefore everything will just fall in and I have bad luck anyway, and blah, blah, blah. to realize that there are so many ways that you can insert a stick into that cycle and just say, no, just even like that's why people always say, breathe. Simply breathe and just take 3 minutes to be silent with yourself. No noise, no background music, no, but I love this kind of stuff. No, nothing. If you can't do that for a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, even tops, and be okay with yourself and allow your thoughts to kind of just ebb and flow, it's a really good indicator that you need to find a way to move with someone who you feel safe with and do some digging into how you can get there. Because that's a life
Absolutely.
that's gone. For me, that's a life that's squandered. It's you really, you're put here. You've chosen to come at this time. You've chosen to be part of what's going on in the world right now. And so let's work together to kind of allow for you to figure out that purpose and how it is that you get to step into and claim what it feels like to be in a state of tranquility or contentment, to understand that joyfulness can come from just being with your own thoughts and you just remember something funny that happened with your best friend when you were 17. It's beautiful how simplistic our lives can become when we strip away the cacophony of noise, when we just allow ourselves to simply breathe and be easy with ourselves. It's so empowering.
It's so empowering, like you said, and that phrase of victimhood. I remember on my journey, I had a coach who was very raw with me, and I appreciate it. And it wasn't until she pointed out how much control I was given away by being a victim.
Yes.
That was honestly the turning point for me, because I had always considered myself to be this independent woman who bulldozed her way through every adversity. And you mean I'm giving my control away because of the narratives that I'm holding? Mind blowing. And
That really is.
it's about taking radical ownership, and these conversations can be the conduit for many people to recognize, hey, wait a minute. Maybe I am not in control, but I want to be.
And that's frightening for a lot of people to come to that as a stopgap measure to say, oh shoot, what happens if I do arrive there? Then what's my next step? Because although I might not like the hamster wheel, I'm comfortable with it. I know where to put my foot next. And that feels like stepping off a cliff. And I think the more that people like you and I can talk about, no, it's so worth the jump. Allow for safe people to be there with you. You will not fall alone. You'll be there and you'll be like, it's just a wondrous place to take that step and to know that you're going to be caught and that it's going to be worth that stepping into the unknown, but also stepping into your best self.
I have thoroughly enjoyed this
Oh.
conversation, Jackie.
I cannot believe that we're done, but I know that our time is
Yes, we are wrapping it up. So
up.
before we do so, tell us how we can connect with you. Tell us a little bit more about what you do and all that jazz.
Thank you. I'd love to. Well, my clients, as I said, are usually very high achieving women, but also I work with men. And we have a couple of different ways that we can work together. I offer one-on-one coaching so that we can work together through things, but I also have the mind, body, and spirit coherence course that I can take groups through. And that is really exciting because then you have a safe group of people that cheer each other on in terms of as we're learning about regulation and dysregulation, and how your vagus nerve can affect how your body is responding to things, and how to recognize what it means to be a spiritual person. Not that you have to believe in a God or one God, but to recognize that when you are feeling more than just yourself, that there's a real divinity in that, that you are divine in and of yourself. You have a higher core, a higher self that understands what it means to be on this journey and really be excited about the journey. You can find me at openmindshypnosis.ca. I am in Canada, Ontario, Canada, and Jackie at themindshiftcoach.ca. And I know that you'll have all of that in the notes. So I'm just saying to people, if you're in this state, if this sounds like it's something that either myself or Leticia or any of the wonderful guests that she has on can help with, please at least go for a consult with someone. Figure out exactly what it means to talk to someone, even for a 10 or 20 minute free consult, and understand how impactful your world can be on the opposite side of where you're living now. Because the impact is unbelievable. And we've probably, kind of pulled this horse to the trough and drowned it now.
Okay, Jackie, one last key takeaway for the audience.
Regulate yourself. So learn when you are not grounded, and then figure out there's lots and lots of YouTube videos in terms of understanding how your vagus nerve works. But it's worthy of you saying, I feel out of control, whether it's through rage or anger, or for in my case, it was crying and overeating and being looking for overstimulation, and find a way to instead regulate yourself. And if you just look that up on YouTube and figure out exactly how breath work works, or havening, or tapping, or taking a course such as like I offer, or the work that you're doing, Letitia, just make sure that you are taking action. If you've got a stack of books beside you on your bedside table, you know deep down that you are looking for an entryway. And this is what we're trying to offer for sure, one way or another. So take advantage of the many ways that are out there.
There is so much help available, audience, and we will encourage you to take that first step and really champion yourself and your healing. So, Jackie, thank you so much for this conversation. Listeners, thank you for joining another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. And all, as always, I want to remind you, you were not built to break, but you damn sure were not built just to survive. So disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week.